It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal is here on the air here this morning with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio, and you're invited to give us a call. So call in with your questions right now. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ben.
And so what are we going to talk about today?
We'll talk about will caveats. Since Cecil's about to talk, then I'll start talking, and now we'll both talk. But at any rate, the way to challenge a will in North Carolina.
Okay.
That's basically what we're talking about. There's a statutory provision, a whole set of statutes with regard to how you specifically do that.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of would think that off the top that it's a, you know, plaintiff versus defendant type thing where, you know, I think that this person – you know, took advantage of the elderly mom or dad or whomever it might be. And, you know, I'm suing you because, you know,
right,
that fraud or that undue influence or whatever it might be. That is not the way that works in North Carolina. It's called a caveat to a will. C-A-V-E-A-T. Caveat. Some people say caveat, but caveat to a will. And the process for filing a caveat in the event that a will, you think that a will is problematic either because it was entered under undue influence, so the person didn't have the capacity to enter the will, or maybe there are just problems with the will itself, like maybe you think the witnesses didn't actually witness, or maybe there are even problems on the face of the will.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean the requisite, it doesn't meet the requisite, you know, the requirements for a will in North Carolina. You file a caveat to a will, and when you file that caveat, what it is basically the will is what's called the race, the
mm-hmm.
RES. It's the thing, and that's what the court has jurisdiction over to make a determination as to the evidence that comes in, as to whether this will, you know, is a valid will or not a valid will. Now, normally when you file a caveat to a will caveat, you're also filing a petition to the clerk of court to freeze the assets of the estate.
Right. To keep this will from going forward.
That's right, because we don't know, not only to keep it from going forward, but to not allow any of the assets of the estate to be spent on anything, including
mm-hmm.
attorney's fees to defend a caveat.
Oh, really?
For example.
Okay.
Because really, estate fees or fees for defending a caveat shouldn't be paid from the estate anyway. We'll come back to that in just a second.
So, Ben, let's go back just a bit. A lot of times the question begins with, you know, a will has gone on record. It's been on record, let's say, maybe even 6 months, 9 months, a year,
uh-huh.
year and a half.
Right.
And a client then, you know, says, well, you know, I want to challenge this will.
Hmm.
I don't think that the person had testamentary capacity, for instance, had the ability to sign the will.
The will is being probated, but the estate is still open.
Oh, definitely. The will is on record. The estate has been open. The estate is under what we would call administration.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's someone who has this question about the validity of that will,
mm-hmm.
the validity of the signature, the validity of the capacity of the testator. Now, you know, one of the first questions that Wes and I are going to get is, you know, have I waited too long?
Mm-hmm.
You know, have I waited too long? Do I have to file something within 3 months? Because everybody kind of knows about this three-month period of time that creditors
mm-hmm.
are able to present their claims to the estate. The answer to that question, Ben, is that you have a lot of time.
3 years.
To caveat a will.
Wow, right. 3 years.
Right.
Correct.
Once it goes
on. Okay.
Right.
So, it's interesting to kind of ponder this for a minute, isn't it, Ben? Because by year one and a half, one of our big things that clients are always talking about is when can you get this estate closed?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most estates are, you know, many estates are opened and closed within a year.
Mm-hmm.
The even larger ones and certainly smaller ones are closed within 4 or 5 months. Okay.
Right.
So the assets have even been distributed, possibly.
Hmm.
And yet someone then can, as we're saying, within 3 years, file a caveat. So these cases can really be quite complicated because of where, when they're filed. You know, if it is the facts that a will gets put on record, hey, you know, and within, you know, a month or so of that time, one of the heirs comes forward and files a caveat, that's kind of a more organized proceeding, isn't it? Okay.
Now, in that, as you mentioned about one of the heirs coming forward, is there an issue of standing in filing a caveat?
Right. I mean, yes, absolutely. You know, you have to either, you have to be standing in a position where you would benefit in some way. I mean, you can't just
be an observer.
I can't go pick a will out of the courthouse and say, I'm going to file a caveat as to this will. I mean, you have to be normally an heir, or you would have to be someone who would receive under intestate succession, or someone who would receive maybe under a prior will. And I know we have a caller, but another thing that we really look at closely before we file a caveat, in addition to the undue influence or the lack of capacity, is what prior documents did this person have? Because most of the time when you have a will caveat, if you're successful in that will caveat, that's going to revive any prior documents that were revoked by the will that you're filing the caveat on.
Right.
So if the previous will is basically the same as the current will, why go through the trouble?
Yes. Right. Right. So that's, so you want to take a look at that. All right. We have Gene in Richlands to join us this morning. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning. I need, please, on people that are handicapped that get lift chairs and wheelchairs and different equipment from different companies.
Right.
But for health reasons. After they pass and we can't find the papers as to who gave it to them, how is this handled? I mean, is it to sell or what, please?
Well, it would, I assume, Gene, be, is there a note outstanding where they've borrowed money to pay for the equipment?
Or no, sir.
No,
not
sir.
That I know of.
Uh-huh.
I don't think anything was purchased.
Uh-huh. Was there an agreement that
different health places offers you different pieces of equipment if you qualify.
Okay, so qualification may be Medicare.
Right.
Qualification.
Well,
yes, sir.
If it's been given to them with no agreement, let's say, Gene, that they agree that upon their death, I mean, there could be an agreement. Let's face it. I'm obviously it's sounding like there isn't, but there could be an agreement that says that, you know, I've been given this wheelchair, but that upon my death, I will see that my estate returns it to the charity or to the entity that gave it to them. But if they truly have given it to the handicapped person, then it is now going to be part of the personal property of their estate, and it's going to pass according to their will, to according to the provision for personal property.
Well, we can't find any papers one way or the other as to who gave them the equipment, and we don't want to sell it or give it away unlawful.
Right. Well, but who were the beneficiaries or heirs of the estate of the person who had the equipment?
The son.
The son.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And has he opened up an estate? Is he the administrator or the executor?
Everything is his.
Uh-huh. Well, then I would say, without knowing more from you, Gene, and I'd be glad to talk to you more about this if you want to, but I would say that it's his equipment.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Gene. Again, she said qualified was an important word in there, I think, because that meant it was probably Medicare.
Yeah, probably so. You know, this is a great call, great question. She's just wanting to not misstep,
right,
which is very important.
Yeah.
But a little bit of further investigation about that probably would be in order. But I totally agree with Cecil. If this was, in fact, an asset of the person who's passed away, then clearly it's either going to pass under the terms of that person's will or it's going to pass under intestate succession to – Gene seemed to be resolved to the fact that that passes to the son.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you do have to look at the value of this equipment, so on and so forth. And, I mean, the son may be, you know, in agreement to maybe provide it back to whomever gave it to him if it was given as a...
Right, if it came from a charity.
Yeah, a charity. So,
sure.
You know, you got to dig a little bit deeper on those things. But that may be a small example, a small case example of a situation where, you know, you don't want to necessarily just assume what to do with that and then
right.
misstep, and then you've got other beneficiaries to talk to. So I would make sure, if I were Gene, to be in communications with this son. We didn't get how old the son is.
Yeah.
But the son needs to be kind of in support of whatever we end up doing.
Okay, we'll have more to come in just a moment on Let's Talk Legal. And your questions, like Gene's, are welcome here if you'd like to give us a call.
You can call me at 800-818-2255 or local numbers 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 at AM 1240. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins joining us on Let's Talk Legal. They bring you this program every Tuesday morning. And your calls are welcome if you would like to call in real quickly.
You can call 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
We're talking about will caveats.
So, Ben, you have this will now on record, okay? An administrator or an executor has duly qualified. Well, it wouldn't be an administrator. Excuse me for that.
Yeah.
It would be an executor.
Right.
Who has duly qualified under the document and has received letters testamentary
mm-hmm.
and has taken an oath, okay,
mm-hmm.
to marshal together the assets, pay the bills, and distribute them according to that will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, you have a challenge to that will, or as we're saying today, the legal word caveat. Obviously, Ben, everything has got to stop, because what if the will is found to be invalid
mm-hmm.
and the will says that everything goes to A and B, but yet, you know, things don't go to A and B without that will. Things go to C and D,
mm-hmm.
okay, you know, heirs by law, if you will, or to some other place, okay, as a result of the but for that will. So everything has got to stop. Now, the statute does allow for there to be certain things to be done, and one of those things is to maintain the mortgages on any properties.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Pay any taxes that the decedent might have.
Of course.
In other words, these are, of course, those taxes. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
These are very logical things, if you think about it, because
mm-hmm.
they don't really depend on the who the beneficiaries are. If there are taxes owed, they need to be paid.
Right.
If their mortgage is to be maintained, they need to be maintained.
All parties, or even potential parties, are okay. You know,
those things are allowed to continue.
Right.
And then, of course, the matter, you know, goes to the Wes Collins and the litigators of the world, and off they go to now, you know, to a jury
mm-hmm.
to determine the validity of that will. And as I said before, you know, testamentary capacity, maybe that's what's being challenged. That it was properly witnessed, maybe that's what's being challenged. That it's not the signature of Aunt Betty.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't her signature. Maybe that's being challenged.
Okay. And again, though, that's a lot of pretty high bars, because we hold that will to be pretty, almost a sacred document.
Yeah, Ben, there's no question about that. And, you know, juries don't really like setting aside wills, deeds, trusts, documents that, you know, that folks have put together and executed during their lifetime. But I'm here to tell you, if you have good facts, they will absolutely set it aside.
Hmm.
So what do we look at, you know, when we're trying to make a determination for the client as to whether it's in their best interest to proceed with a caveat to a will? I mean, some of the pretty obvious things. How soon before the death was the document executed?
Right.
That's pretty important. Medical records. What kind of issues did this person have from a medical perspective? Did this person have dementia, Alzheimer's? Do we know of a medical note that was entered before by, you know, a doctor indicating that this person can't make decisions for himself or herself? a lot of times we don't necessarily have the medical records
right.
when we're ready to proceed with the caveat. But
that's a point of discovery?
Yeah, and sometimes it is, absolutely. We always get medical records in caveat cases unless it's just an undue influence case. But nevertheless, sometimes, depending on the circumstances, we may request medical records from the executor, see if we can get those to determine how strong our caveat case would be before we file the caveat. Now, that kind of tips them off that we're looking into that, and that could lead them to a situation where they start liquidating assets or selling the property. You're doing those kind of things. So you have to be, you know, careful about that. Sometimes it's the better practice to file the caveat and then serve your discovery request for the medical record. So we've already locked the estate down and we get those records, you know, afterwards so that we don't run the risk of things being liquidated.
Right.
As I mentioned before, obviously prior documents. If there's not a prior document, how is a successful caveat proceeding going to affect us? How is it going to affect what we receive under this estate? Now, you know, sometimes when it's siblings, you know, who are bringing the caveat, maybe the let's say that we don't have a previous will, so the in the event we proceed with the caveat and we win, then we go back to intestate succession, meaning it passes under the laws of the state of North Carolina, and maybe the effect of that is not that much different than what's in the will. You have to weigh that. But, excuse me, in the caretaker or girlfriend situation where the girlfriend has maybe been the one that we think has been involved in the procurement of this will, maybe taken the person to an attorney or maybe gotten a document offline and gotten the testator to sign the document before, you know, his or her friends is witnesses, you know, those kind of things. Those are kind of the all or nothing cases because, you know, obviously in most of those type cases, in the event we set the will aside, if there's not a prior document, then that girlfriend, you know, is not going to receive a thing under intestate succession. So we have to analyze all these things for the client. We have to be very honest with each other, and they have to give us good information. And usually we sometimes get comments like, well, Daddy said this, and Daddy said this, and he was getting ready to do that. That doesn't carry a whole lot of weight. You know, what really carries weight is, you know, the opportunity for the person to be unduly influenced. Let's say the caregiver didn't allow anyone else to get around the person, had access to them almost all the time.
Family was excluded.
Right. It could be, you know, the brother or the sister who's doing the same thing. When you call in to talk to dad or mom, whoever the testator is, they won't allow you to talk to them. That kind of stuff. The medical records, obviously, you know, those are going to tell a story for us as far as, you know, capacity goes. So, you know, that those kind of things are what, you know, kind of turn a will caveat. Those are that's the real evidence that you need to get down to, you know, in most cases. So when you file a caveat again, I know we've maybe got 4 or 5 minutes left. Let me talk about procedure for a second.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll come back and look at that as well here on the procedure. As if you're challenging a will, of course, there's many famous cases about that, but you usually come down to the typical ones or local ones that we're talking about here. If you would like to give us a call, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, bringing you Let's Talk Legal and talking about will caveat and the procedures there.
Right. When you file your caveat, of course, we talk about file the petition with the court, get an order at that point in time, freezing the assets.
So now is that with the clerk of court?
With the clerk. Okay. The clerk will enter that order, and then the jurisdiction is transferred to the superior court. Okay. The issue before the jury is really one issue, and it's in Latin to visit vel non, and basically is the thing, the will.
Is it or not?
Yeah, is it or is it not? Exactly. Yeah. So the jury, again, when I say jury, this is one of the few areas in the law where you don't even have a choice to have this be a bench trial. This can't just be a judge making a decision. You have to have a jury make a decision. That kind of goes back to, you know, the importance that we have in our law as it relates to a will, you know, what we give to a will, the credence to a will, and it's being such a sacred document. Once you file that caveat, you have to give notice to anyone who would have any interest in that. And then you file a notice of hearing as to what's called an alignment.
An alignment.
Because what happens then is that some of the people or charities or whomever it might be who may have some interest in the will may not care about what happens with the caveat. So they may not want to align with either the caveator, who is the person or persons who are filing the caveat proceeding, or the propounder, who would be the person or persons coming to the caveat proceeding to say, no, we support the will. So that's where the parties kind of line up. It's not really a plaintiff versus defendant. It's caveator, which is really in the plaintiff's position because they have to prove, they have the burden of proof.
Right.
And then the propounder is really in the defendant's position because they're defending the document. Okay. So once that alignment hearing is completed and there's an order entered by the judge, the Superior Court judge, indicating this person, and this person is the caveator, you know, this person are the propounders, then we can move forward with things like discovery.
Everybody's taking their side.
That's right. Motions, depositions, you know, getting the medical records, doing all the typical things that we do in litigation that we talked about on the program before, but you've got to have that alignment first to go forward.
But as you said, it's before a jury, and the jury either says this is the will or it is not.
Exactly.
It doesn't rule on the replacement for it.
Correct.
Right.
It could be. You could have a. I had one case one time where we had two wills in one caveat. It was basically a caveat as to the will that was being probated and a previous will that would have been revived if the initial caveat was successful.
Right.
So the good news on that one for I was defending the caveat in that case. The good news on that one is that the previous will was almost exactly the same as the last will. So I had to lose twice in order to lose the case. But luckily we won it on the first case.
Okay.
Well, the facts were good. So, I mean, I wouldn't say luckily, but nevertheless.
Yeah.
But that usually doesn't happen. I mean, normally you've got just the caveat as to one will, and then it automatically would revive, you know, the prior will. But the jury doesn't have the right to get into the document and say things like, you know, instead of leaving this person $20,000, we're going to leave them $30,000. You can't change the document. The jury's decision is real simple. It either is or it isn't.
And then the results become another decision, another case.
That's
down the road.
Yep.
All right, we'll talk about that later. Again, if you want to reach out to Harvell and Collins, go online to harvellandcollins.com.